Well, there you go, kids. Good afternoon. It's Lambda Weekly, and I am most assuredly not David Taffet. I've not hijacked the show. David is out this week. We'll explain the reasoning why. Joining us, we have Sam Tornabene. Good morning, Sam, or good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Leslie?
Excellent. Living the dream. Patty Fink, not late today, which is kind of unusual, and we're happy to have her. And, of course, my partner, Katie Sprinkle, a frequent guest on Lambda Weekly. Welcome.
Apparently more frequently than I realized.
Yeah, kind of the Joan
like
Rivers
that.
Of the Tonight Show. Anyway, the reason David is not here, I don't know whether you have heard or not, but his husband, Brian, passed away suddenly this past week, and it was sad and tragic, certainly for David. It's affected so many of us. His memorial service was at North Haven Methodist on Friday, and it was so well attended and was beautiful, and it was a testament to David, really, and to Brian as well, to how much he has given in this community to see so many people show up and show support for him, and our heart goes out to him this afternoon.
And I think, too, you know, many of our listeners may remember Brian was actually on the show last June. We did an episode where they had just gotten married on June 8th.
So yeah, the Turtle Creek Corral performance. We were there.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Big wedding at City Performance Hall with hundreds of their closest friends. And we did an episode where we did the newlywed game on the air, and Brian was on the air. So if you want to go back and listen to that, remember Brian. Another way you can remember Brian and David is to honor Brian with a donation to your favorite charity. Mm-hmm. You could contribute to Congregation Beth Elbina, KNON, Equality Texas, any of those of your choice, the SPCA. Would be a great way to honor Brian and to let his memory live on. And may his memory be a blessing.
Indeed. Yeah, he's definitely missed today. Our thoughts are with you, David, if you're listening. We hope you're feeling better and doing okay, and I know he'll be back here. But we just volunteered to come in and pinch it for him because he's always been there for us, and we wanted to be there for him. Sam, you're a little bit sleepy-eyed. What, did you get up at like 2:30 this morning?
Yeah, with the time change and the time zones, it was about 2:30 when I got up.
So you just got back from Washington, D.C.
That's right.
And the first question that I had when we were talking out in the lobby is, what's the vibe like there right now? Because I know that from seeing and reading and whatnot, you kind of get one feeling, but I think the press is a little bit irritated with him, so I think we get a little bit of a slant on things. But what's the vibe like in D.C. right now?
Well, it was a little weird. You know, I lived there for 27 years, and I, you know, saw a lot of changes that went through that town, but it seems a little tentative about things. Mm-hmm. People don't really know what's going on. They're not quite sure what kind of steps to take, and you know, I think particularly in the business community, they're a little bit not even sure what kind of policies are going to be put out there.
Now, you were there more or less with the Human Rights Campaign. Was there any specific legislation that you were there lobbying on, or is it more of general equality? What is it you were there to speak with representatives about?
Well, this is the annual spring conference, and in conjunction with that, HRC has a lobby day where people go to the Hill, and it's not really to talk about specific pieces of legislation, though you can if you want, but the idea is to show the LGBTQ community on the Hill, to show that we're part of the communities that all of these members represent, and that we're there to make our voices heard.
Mm-hmm. One of the things Katie's fond of saying is that history is made by those who show up, right. So we're very grateful that you did, in fact, show up.
You know, I've been to the lobby day many times when I was serving on the Human Rights Campaign, and I saw I'm sure you'll share with us, but when in years past when we've gone, we've been, like, I remember going into Senator Cornyn's office, and we got to speak with the assistant letter correspondent for his office.
that's kind of
the assistant, not even the letter correspondent, yeah. The assistant letter correspondent.
That was kind of what we were expecting, you know, because I got my initial sheets, you know, that were saying who we were going to talk to, and they all had titles like that, you know, and I, you know, of course, you look them up, and you see that they're just out of, you know, school, or they just finished their internship last month, and you're thinking, okay, but at least, you know, we're making the effort, and, you know, you get the card, you follow up, you send them thank you notes, you at least have a presence. But this year was different. We had a Texas delegation of about 30 people, so that was Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, And we were led by Megan Stabler of Austin. Mm-hmm. And we had an appointment with one of Cornyn's staffers at noon, but Cornyn does a coffee with Cornyn at the U.S. Capitol Visitors Center on that day. So we decided we would all just assemble there and see if we could get some time with the senator. So we, our strategy was that we weren't going to clump. You know, we were going to try to be a little stealthy here, so we'd be all in different places. So when he was taking questions, it would seem like this section is all HRC LGBT. You know, we would be sprinkled throughout. So he, of course, had some pretty wise staff members who came out to talk to people and find out where you're from, what you're here to talk about, and stuff. So what happened was another staffer came out, asked all 30 of us to stand behind the podium for a photo op with the senator. So he came out.
He did.
Wow.
Not in that way. He came out from behind the curtain in the back.
Crazy.
And, you know, we had the picture taken. So there is photographic evidence that Senator Cornyn knows LGBT people. And he spoke with us for quite some time. Megan led the discussion at that point. He wasn't particularly helpful as far as, I mean, he said he wasn't familiar with the Equality Act, for instance.
It was in all the papers.
Yeah. I know. I'm sure he gets those clips.
Just not the right ones.
But he...
not intended.
Right.
You know, at least he was engaged. And we did get to see him. And later when we talked to his staff, I mean, there were younger people who were very much on our side, if you will. But, you know, these were in separate conversations that they said, you know, we understand what you're talking about. Politically, that's not viable right now. But, you know... there was some signs of hope that people are, you know, understanding and the messages are getting through.
And the flip side of that, though, the messages get through, and it's, we'll talk more about it later, like with the SB 6 hearings, is how hundreds of people can tell compelling stories and children can pour their hearts out, and then the committee votes 7-1 to put this hate-filled bill out into the General Senate. How do you not get down? Because to me it seems like this is different now than it's been before. It just seems like there's a prevailing mean-spiritedness in the GOP. It's almost like there's a backlash and a punishing where there's this spirit of taking things away from people. There's not, you know, respecting rights or putting things forward that make the country better. It's taking things away from other people. And how do you not get down with that where somebody will say, yeah, listen to everything you have to say, and then I'm going to go ahead and screw you as soon as you leave?
Well, also something that's interesting there is that you're talking about having compassion for people. You're talking about being able to empathize with people. But that's just not politically viable right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be a real person. I can't be a human being with heart and feelings because, well, you know, I got to protect my phony baloney job.
Yeah, that's not what the party stands for right now.
But an example of that, I think, too, is this whole idea that we've seen in the last week about, well, we're going to separate parents from their children when we, you know, arrest them, undocumented people, as a deterrent. You know, so they're going to, like, be mean.
Yeah, it's just mean-spiritedness.
It is. Yeah. It's just pure meanness.
But, you know, to answer your question, how do I not get down about that? I'll kind of defer to James Baldwin on that one. I'm an optimist because I'm alive.
Yeah.
And
so you got that going for you.
Well, no, that's that was a most an amazingly powerful movie. I mean, I'm not sure if you saw it.
I saw it.
I'm not your Negro, but
it
was absolutely amazing. And James Baldwin just... bringing him to a new generation of people, just the inspiration from that was incredible. But it is true. You know, you have to be optimistic. You have to keep looking at the way that this is going to move forward. You know, it's chipping away. It's constantly doing this. You know, I came out in 1974, mm-hmm. and we are still fighting for job security. We are still fighting not to be denied housing and public accommodation. And you know, you have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it.
It's something C.C. Cox was sitting next to me at the memorial for Brian. And it was before it started, before Katie got there. And we were just kind of looking around the room. And C.C. turned to me and she said these incredible words. She said, not to get too heavy about it or you know, to let it hold us down or anything. But she said, loss is such a big part of our community.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been.
It has been.
And it's something that we do well is deal with and handle loss because it's been a such a big part of who and what we are.
On every level.
And on every level, yeah. And the fight, like you say, it's still not over. I mean, there's certainly for equal rights for the whole LGBT and on down the line spectrum. But we've, as transgender people, have kind of been under the laser focus lately ourselves and just not wanting to, you know, have people, they just don't want us to exist. We're trying to be wiped from the social landscape.
That's true. It does give me hope, though, when I see a transgender woman talking to Senator Cornyn, standing there eye to eye as peers. Again, he's not bending at this point, but I doubt that that would have happened 5 years ago.
No, and that's something we go out, we speak a lot. We were at SMU recently, and we go out and speak at any number of places. And one of the reasons we do is it seems like time and time and time again, we talk to the audience, and over they say, I've never met someone who's transgender before. And there's so few people that have that we just one at a time them. And so now after we've spoken to you, now you have spoken to someone who's transgender. Now you've met someone and we're not threatening, we're not scary, and they kind of go, oh wow, and you see the light go on.
And sometimes it's easy to get down when, you know, we talked about this before the show, a woman I knew took her own life last week.
Oh my gosh.
I still operate a transgender legal clinic to help transgender people get their identity documents done, and early on, she was involved. She was studying to be a paralegal. She was involved in that program and eventually moved to Houston. And, you know, we lost her a little over a week ago. Hang in there, Zoe. And so it's easy to, when you lose someone like Zoe, to say, you know, my God, we've lost another one. But the thing to remember is, you know, yeah, we lost the battle with Zoe, and we still have our transgender sisters of color who are being murdered in the streets. And those are clearly losses, but where we get our victories is when we meet those people who have never met a transgender person before, who have no concept of who we are, and we meet them. And now they can say, you know what, I know someone who's a transgender. For each person that we meet and introduce ourselves and introduce them to a transgender person, we win that battle. And Leslie and I spoke at SMU. There were about 8 people in that class who had never met a transgender person. Well, we've got 8 victories right there. And so remember that as horrible and as heartbreaking as each loss is, we can rack up multitudes of victories by meeting and introducing ourselves to new people, because now it becomes harder for them to say, oh, I don't care about those people, when you actually know one.
And I think it's really incredibly powerful and so, so important for 30 people from Texas in a group to go in a year when we don't have anything on the table proactively, and we know that there's a lot of rain coming down on us. To be there in the low periods and show ourselves and let them see us, make sure they see us, just as we are on years when we're hopeful for something positive to happen, whether that's in D.C. or Austin or other places. It's really important to be there when we know we're not going to get anything other than perhaps some FaceTime and some we're here. We are here.
Yeah, it's like Harvey Milk said, you know, you have to be visible, you have to be out where they can see you, and then eventually, like, and what you were talking about is some of your experiences, like with Congressman Sessions, is if they can get to know you on a personal level, it's a whole lot harder to hate you.
Yeah, so let me get to Congressman Sessions. As you know, Congressman Sessions represents the eastern part of Dallas, Mesquite, Garland, around in there. And
famously said there were no gay people in his district.
Right. So we had a meeting with some of his staffers. He was not scheduled to be there, and when we went to his office, he indeed was not there. So we went into his office where he has a little conference table, and we were sitting around chatting about stuff. So as we were going through our discussion, the congressman walks in. So here's Pete Sessions. He comes in, he sits on the couch, listens to the conversation for a few minutes until he gets the gist of what's going on, and then he leaves. And we all kind of thought, well, no surprise there. But then he comes back. And he started to engage in the conversation. And what caught his attention was one of the people there was Ingrid Retzer, who's a U.S. Marshal here in Dallas. And Ingrid was talking about her story, which is that, you know, here she is. She's a U.S. Marshal. She puts her life on the line daily. And she focused on last July when the police shooting happened here in Dallas and how she was called in to help support the police. She was there in full battle gear. And she didn't know if she was going to make it home. She didn't know what was going to happen that evening. And, of course, here's her partner, Jamie, at home, would be completely unprotected by, you know, benefits, by any kind of survivor.
Sure.
Benefits, they're not married yet. So, you know, who's there to take care of her while she's taking care of, as she said, you, Congressman, and your family?
Right.
Well, that touched him. And he said, so you're a U.S. Marshal. I'm a U.S. Marshal. And he pulled out his badge, and wow. She pulled out her badge, and they exchanged, you know, we took pictures of this.
You show me yours, I'll show you.
Exactly, exactly. So then he says, Ingrid, come on, let's go in my man cave. And we're like, what? So he's got this walk-in closet in his congressional office. So the two of them go in, and they come out. He takes her in there, and he says, you got to grab a costume. We got to come out there in costume. So they grab cowboy hats. And the two of them come out matching cowboy hats, and we're like, okay, this is really interesting. We're not talking substantive here. But then we did get into a conversation. He did tell us that he has a sister-in-law who is a lesbian who lives in Austin. That was new news to me. She has an African-American partner, and they live in Austin, and I think they're married at this point. We did ask, well, if that's the case, how can you not support the Equality Act? And that's when you get back into political viability and all these other things.
Right.
Where he went after that was he decided to talk to everybody else in the room, you know, because he had focused on Ingrid. But he went to each individual, asked what you did, where you're from, a few other questions. He tried to relate. I mean, it was very engaging. Mm-hmm. So that from we were there to humanize what the LGBT experience was. He was there humanizing what the Pete Sessions experience was. And I think that even though, again, he's still not on our team with the legislation that we went past, it was a good discussion.
Yeah, you know? Made the connections.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Sam Tornabene, Patty Fink, Katie Sprinkle. I'm Leslie McMurray, filling in for David Taffet. We'll be back with more of Lambda Weekly after this. Welcome back to Lambda Weekly. My name is Leslie McMurray, filling in for David Taffet. Katie Sprinkle is joining us, Patty Fink, and Sam Tornabene. I was just relating a story, meeting with Congressman Pete Sessions in Washington, and that had to be, like you say, almost surreal to see them come bouncing out of there in cowboy hats.
It was surreal. Photographic evidence does exist, so it did happen. And he did have his staff photographer come in to take pictures of each of us with him. And they promised to send us signed pictures of us with Pete. So.
Yeah. Well, like you say, the Equality Act isn't up for anything this year. Is it dead? Is it going to come back later? Do we have to wait till 2020 or maybe the midterms?
2018,
huh?
We're probably going to have to wait a while. Yeah. I don't think there's any plans to introduce it this year. I don't know really what Congress is going to be trying to do. I mean, I'm going to work on repealing and replacing Senator Cruz is what I'm going to
do. You know, I could certainly get behind that.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll get a lot of support around certain parts of the state of
indeed.
Texas, but it might be an uphill battle.
You know, I one year when I went to the Equality Convention, we did Lobby Day in D.C., my sister came with me, my older sister, and she lives down on the coast. She lived she lives in an area which was represented by Ron Paul at the time, on a river, and she wanted to talk about river issues with him while we were advocating for us. But she told me afterwards, she said, I finally feel like a real American, like a full American, because I went to Washington, D.C., I went up to Capitol Hill, and I spoke with my representative, the person who represents me in Congress, and it feels good. Mm-hmm. It feels so good to, even though, you know, nothing may come of it, they may not do what we ask them to do, it feels like a really solid experience. Like, if you're an American, you need to do that at least once in your life.
Yeah.
You know, go and speak and talk to them. And we have an opportunity to do that coming up now in Texas, mm-hmm. to go to Austin and be a full citizen and talk to those who make law, represent us, and potentially impact our lives in big, big ways. Can you tell us a bit about what's going to happen on the 20th?
I will do that. First, I want to give you one more news of the weird from Washington.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so there was a woman from Houston, who was also on the team. I wasn't with her, but she is a family friend of, wait for it, Blake Farenthold.
Oh, wow.
So she has,
who is Sissy Farenthold's grandson.
Okay.
If you know Texas history, Sissy Farenthold, big, big Democratic name.
But Blake came in on the Tea Party wave. He, you know, has had a number of scandals, including the ducky pajamas, and Google that. but she has pictures of the two of them, you know, doing the selfies and stuff. So, again, I mean, being out there, being active, it's critical.
And interestingly enough, the Voting Rights Act, not the Voting Rights Act, the redistricting in Texas had some rulings this week that were very big. It affects Blake Farenthold's district. He was his was suspect now. They're probably going to redraw those, but I just want to throw that in while
Well, they all are suspect.
Yes. Three in particular, but his is included in that.
You know, one of the things that I've come to realize is that we really need to start focusing on the redistricting and the way it's done.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, part of the problem in North Carolina is you've got these whack jobs in the state legislature there, but a lot of that has to do with the way they've redistricted. Made their jobs almost ironclad. They can do some of the most idiotic things, such as HB2, and they're almost bulletproof. And we've got to do away with that. There's got to be a better way, so that our districts are not gerrymandered, so that we no longer live in a democracy.
So true. It's so very true. And that happens every 10 years. So we need to do what we can to make that change happen before, so that the people who will do it fairly are in place when it happens.
Looking at the front of the Dallas Voice this week, there is a picture of a young transgender girl named Libby. And I know her mom, Rachel, and her father as well. And you can see his father, his hands, is comforting her. They were at the SB6 lobby day where they were speaking on behalf of the transgender community against the bill in front of that state Senate committee. And it just, the look on that girl's face to me is haunting. She must be 6-7 years old. And to hear, especially people from the religious right, saying things that are so hateful, wrong, they're just lies. They're spewing lies against transgender kids. I had to be heartbreaking. You know, it was unfortunate, I think, for those kids to even hear some of the things that were being said while their parents were waiting to speak. But ultimately, they did. They had their peace. And I'm hoping that law, you know, never sees the light of day. But it just, it certainly illustrates how much work we have to do to change people's minds, hearts, and perceptions of transgender kids, because they aren't the threats. They're the ones that need protecting.
Oh, absolutely. And that you know, works right into the lobby that we have coming up on March 20th. This is the All In for Equality Day of Advocacy that we're having. It's the statewide organizations that are putting this together include Equality Texas, the Texas Freedom Network, the Transgender Education Network of Texas, and the Human Rights Campaign. But we have a lot of other groups around the state, too, that are working toward bringing people down to Austin to advocate for LGBTQ equality. In fact, we have 12 organizations in Dallas in total. That includes Gala North Texas, the Resource Center, the Cathedral of Hope. Let's see who else we have here. We have Stonewall Democrats, Coalition for Aging LGBT, Lambda Legal, LULAC, and I think that gets us up to 12. But that's a pretty good cross-section of different groups that are all supportive of our issues that are going down there. The goal for the day is to have, I think, about 1,000 people. The original goal was 500 people total, but we've upped that. We have at least 5 buses coming out of Dallas, as well as people that are getting down there on their own transportation. So it's going to be, I think, a pretty good day. Basically, the routine, and we can talk a little bit more about how you lobby in a little bit, but, you know, we're going to have folks rally in front of the Capitol. They'll all be assigned to their individual members to go talk to their offices. We'll walk around the Capitol. The things that are most important, clearly, it's talking to your member representatives and their staff, but it's also just being visible down there. I mean, yeah. We keep coming back to this visibility idea, but it really is critical. And when you see 1,000 people united in a cause walking around on the state Capitol grounds, people notice.
Yeah, if we could just get them to get out and vote as well, because it seems like sometimes that's, you know, an area people get all fired up, and then when it comes time for the election, they figure everyone else will.
Yeah, and we have council elections coming up that are going to be pretty important.
Yeah, another thing, looking through the legislation that's out there, SB 6 certainly getting a lot of press, and to me it's almost mystifying why, when you have our Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick saying that the biggest issue facing Texans is where little kids go to the bathroom in school, it leaves me scratching my head thinking, what in the hell's the matter with you? I mean, there's a lot of other issues facing Texas, but there are around 15 bills that I counted up that combine a couple of things. One is refusing or being mean to somebody based on your deeply held religious beliefs. Now, I don't want to get off on a soapbox, but I'm going to get off on a soapbox. Both my mom and dad were devout Christians, and I think both of them would be turning over in their grave to hear what's being done in the name of Jesus Christ. I don't think there's anything in his teachings or in that book that say it's a good thing to be taking rights away from people or to be judging people. There's nothing in that book that commanded people to judge one another.
Or refuse service.
And that, yeah, this is what's going on.
I think it
and
says serve.
Right, they have to make...
Not don't serve, you know?
That's
yeah, like
right.
522 says allowing county clerks to pass off issuing marriage licenses to other certifying officials because of their deeply held religious beliefs. Or 651 redefines and expands the definition of religious expression. And on it goes, is basically allowing your religion to hate other people. And I wish I could see people from large Christian congregations standing up and repudiating those things, saying, this is not what we believe. This is not who we are. And you're offending me by even putting bills like this out there. It's heartbreaking. That's not what it's about.
You do have a lot of members of the faith community that are supportive and, you know, have been affirming. They need to be more vocal.
Yeah, they need to be loud.
We need to give them more support, I think. What I've never seen in any of these things is, how do you define a person's sincerely held religious belief? Do you have a test to see, have you been to church 3 out of 4 Sundays? How much of your, you know, do you give 10% of your gross wages to a religious institution? Have you ever been divorced? Have you ever had an affair? Have you ever, I mean, do we ask all these questions before we affirm that that is truly a sincerely held religious belief that will then enable them to be mean to other people?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, too, if you inadvertently serve someone who's gay, do you have to go back later if you find out and give them a refund?
I believe that would be a sin.
Do you have to carry a card?
Yeah.
You know, to get demerits if you accidentally serve someone and have to retest?
Well, I think what's really crazy about this is, let's think about this. Let's say that this passes and this idea that you could refuse service. Where does it end? And how are you supposed to know as a Texan, as a consumer, as a person who navigates life in the normal ways, you know, just going about your business? How do you know when you're going to get denied service? And in what circumstances would that be? Are there going to be signs out in front of shops that say no service to gay people, black people, you know, Jewish people, disabled people? Are they going to be able to put that, and does it apply to all the others or just the queers? I don't know.
Or how about other teams in the NFC East? I mean, if you're just, you know,
yeah,
if they're
yeah.
Philly fans and, hey, you know, the Cowboys are playing this weekend, so sorry, we're not going to serve you because of my deeply held NFL religious beliefs.
But we're talking about, you know, like, not just cakes and purchasing, but what about when you call 911? You know, what about when you show up in an ER if a doctor decides, well, you look queer to me, so I'm not going to serve you.
Interestingly,
I'm not going to save your life.
Our Attorney General Paxton has already answered that question by filing a lawsuit that has been upheld by that wingnut in Wichita Falls that says doctors can refuse to treat transgender people or women who've had abortions based on their deeply held religious beliefs. And that's an obscenity. And
it
again,
is obscenity.
That's another, I wish that I would hear something from the American Medical Association to stand up and say, the Hippocratic Oath supersedes our religious beliefs. We will treat you as a human being, whether we agree or don't agree. But they're not standing up. I'm not hearing anything from the medical community. They're silent. Where is it?
Well, what I don't get is nobody's really had these conflicts with their religious beliefs until now when it's about the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't seen people in en masse, because this is happening state after state after state across the country. En masse, suddenly there's an awakening. There was none for divorce. You know, like we need to be stopping. We cannot serve people who've been divorced. That never happened. That never happened.
Well, how about the rape of over 50 women down in Waco at a religious institution?
Yes,
where's the moral outrage there?
Oh, I've got enough for everybody because it's I'm an alum. But
yeah. Yep.
Well, here's your problem.
But it's like all of this stuff got dreamed up. Because, you know, as I've said before, I think the trans community is paying the price for marriage equality. Mm-hmm. They wanted to lash out.
We're sorry.
And they saw a vulnerable community they could just latch onto and pummel. And that's what they've been doing.
But I think the real danger in SB6 at this point, among so many other things, but it has become a cause celeb for Dan Patrick. It doesn't really matter what SB6 says. If it doesn't pass, Dan Patrick loses power. Mm-hmm. And this is a power play for him. He cannot afford, you know, in his position, to let this, you know, fail in any way that's not going to be diminishing in his own personal power. So it's kind of a battle. I mean, when it does die, and I'm confident it will, because, again, I'm an optimist.
The balloon is always half full.
Exactly. But, you know, that's going to leave a little bit of a vacuum in there. And, you know, Strauss was reelected speaker unanimously. You have a block of power in the House. You have a block of power in the Senate. And it's going to be interesting to watch the clash of these titans, if you will. The problem, of course, though, is that the victims of whatever the clash is going to be are going to be some very innocent people. And
exactly.
That's just wrong.
And I think what they don't understand, particularly with SB6, is if it should pass, they're going to be men walking into women's restrooms by law,
yeah,
and freaking people out. And there's not going to be a damn thing they can do about it. And I suggest that we have trans men go into women's restrooms with a cisgender woman, always with a witness. So that there can be no, he attacked me, or he was menacing, or something. Well, you know, and just do it all over the state.
SB6 actually codifies, I think there's six different categories that can go into the restroom of the other gender. And that makes it law in there. Because some of these people that are proposing it are wrongly saying, well, it encourages men to dress up as women and go into the women's room. Actually, no, it doesn't.
And which has never happened.
There's nothing that happens. There's nothing to stop that now, and there's nothing that would stop it under SB6. But you could dress up as a janitor,
mm-hmm,
which, I mean, you pretty much, if you just have a trash can and a floor sweeper, nobody's going to say anything because it codifies in that law. You could also be helping someone who's handicapped. You could also pretend to be someone who's handicapped. You could pretend to be helping a child. There's a whole category of things that would codify that entrance into the women's room.
And let's be clear about something else regarding SB6. It's the same for HB2. These bills are not about bathrooms. Dan Patrick does not give a hoot in hell about bathrooms. Dan Patrick needs to sell a myth. And that myth is that the cities like Dallas, who have recognized that transgender people are part of our community, that need to be welcomed into the social spaces of our community, and we're going to make sure that they are allowed to do so. Dan Patrick wants you to believe that doing that puts other people at risk. That is flat wrong.
And we have the track record in Dallas to prove that. We have a non-discrimination ordinance that was passed May 8th, 2002. It's been in place for almost 15 years, and we've never had an incident like that. And what it did express is that we who live in the city of Dallas, our values are such that we say no one in our city will be discriminated against at all. Mm-hmm. In employment, in public accommodations, in housing. This is not who we are. We're not discriminatory people.
And
in Dallas,
everyone seeks to take that away.
They want to take that away.
That Dallas did that, and we have shown over the last 15 years that it does not put people at risk, that what Dan Patrick is really selling here is a stigma. He wants to place a stigma on the trans community so that he can use that to block the greater LGBT community from measures to protect them in social spaces.
I did hear a trial balloon for a new anti-trans argument that I had never heard before. But this goes along with the, what if I wake up one morning as a man and decide I'm a woman, which that's not trans, that's ridiculous. But anyway, this was put forth by Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. And what he suggested was that a trans person becomes trans because they want the economic benefit of being able to apply for a Small Business Administration loan to support a woman-owned business.
Yeah, I might need that because I took an 87% pay cut when I transitioned from male to female. So, yeah, it's the economic benefit that was the lure for me.
But the ludicrousness of that kind of an argument, but they're still searching for these other things to try to... And it's always... What if a man just wakes up one morning and decides, well, he's a woman?
I can kind of say, you know, we run to a break here real quick, but it's like, what if someone wakes up suddenly one morning and decides to spend $13,000 in hair removal on their face to lose their health insurance, lose their job, lose their house, lose their marriage, have nothing to support them legally anywhere, to change their name, change their ID, change all of their credit cards and everything else over, and also lose your credit rating, because when you change your name and ID, your credit rating goes...
Because you want those SBA loans.
That's why. Yeah, it's for the SBA loans. So, yeah, this is patently ridiculous, and I would love to talk to them about that. Uh-huh. Maybe another time. We're going to take a quick break and come back and maybe try and shine a light on some of the more positive legislation that's up for review in this legislative session. This is Lambda Weekly on KNON. Welcome back to Lambda Weekly, where we're in mid-conversation between Katie and Patty. But fortunately, no bad words are being said. My name is Leslie McMurray, filling in for David Taffet, who is in mourning after the loss of his husband, Brian, earlier in the week. I don't know if you heard, but our hearts certainly go out to him, and I know he'll be back in his chair soon, and it's our honor and privilege to fill in for him. Joining us, we have my partner, Katie Sprinkle, Patty Fink, and Sam Tornabene. We've been talking about some of the legislative issues, both nationally and locally, statewide. Some of the issues that we're looking at, and it's interesting, Katie, maybe you could speak to this, because a big part of your practice is the name and gender business for the transgender community and helping them get correct identity documents. And that's one of the things in SB 6 is they're saying, if you have these documents changed, then you won't have a problem. Well, for kids, you really can't do that. But there is some legislation that's being proposed to make that easier, or at least codify it.
Well, here's the thing that Senator Colquist, who should know better, but, of course, she has partnered up with Dan Patrick on their little crusade. Bottom line is this. There are 254 counties in the state of Texas, and there are three where you can have any reasonable expectation of having a judge hear your case and grant you a court order that is required to get your identity documents up to date. And... if you don't know the magic language to put in your order, good luck getting your birth certificate updated. So everything that Dan Patrick and Senator Colquist have talked about this past week is a bald-faced lie. If either one of them were Pinocchio, right now their noses would be embedded in the moon. That's how much they're lying about this stuff. The fact is that... you have to get a court order. You have to be able to go in and demonstrate to a judge that you have medically transitioned. The Tucker Carlson argument falls flat on its face when you bother to look to see what you have to do to transition. Because if Tucker Carlson wakes up one morning and says, I'm going to go get myself an SBA loan so I can start my own conservative BS network.
As a woman.
Well, as soon as he goes down wearing his pretty little red lipstick and his high heel shoes, he's going to discover that they're going to look at his identity documents and say, I'm sorry, sir, but you are not going to get an SBA loan because you are not a woman. And plain simple fact of the matter is Tucker Carlson would just send his wife to go do it for him. It's like a straw purchase. So the fact is that he's ignoring the process. In Texas, it's very limited. And like I said, there's three counties where you can go.
One of which is Dallas.
And that's it. And so this nonsense that somehow you can just willy-nilly go down and change your birth certificate, change your driver's license, doesn't exist. It needs to exist. It needs to exist in all 50 states. It is a matter of national security because when law enforcement encounters people, namely me, they need to be able to look at my ID and see how I look on a day-to-day basis. You know, there were a number of states where trans people were going in to get new driver's license pictures taken. And they were demanding they remove makeup and all that stuff because, no, we need to know what you really look like. Well, guess what, jackass? This is how I normally look. Yeah. So you probably want this picture, not that one.
We should sneak that requirement into the Patriot Act because it's a matter of national security.
Mm-hmm. So, sure.
That's true.
It is, absolutely.
Our passports need to reflect who we are so that when we travel, that's who we are. So the battle line here is we need a uniformed way. I talked to a transgender woman about a month ago. She was from a county up along the Oklahoma border. She went in to try to get a court order, and the judge said, I'm going to deny your name change. I'm going to deny your gender marker correction. I don't really care about your medical documentation. I don't care what surgery you've done. The county thanks you for your filing fee. We appreciate your donation. Good luck. And denied everything and sent her on her way.
Wow.
And that is the norm, unfortunately, in the state of Texas. Judges who, for political expediency, for quote-unquote deeply held religious beliefs, or just because they like to be jackasses, across the state do that. And I would love to say that's the only conversation like that that I've had. Unfortunately, it's not. I've heard stories from different parts of the state where that has, in fact, happened. So we need something where we can do it, at least in Texas, but we definitely need it nationwide.
Well, tell us about Lucio's bill.
Well, first of all, you need to understand that there are two Lucios. One is a state senator who is the only Democrat backing SB6. However, he has a son who is a state rep who actually this week proposed a uniform way to correct gender markers on identity documents. And it's like, wow, I want to be at their house come Thanksgiving.
That's why we have Lucio 3 and Lucio 2.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, yeah, I definitely want to be there and just stir that pot up because that's going to be a fun conversation to have. But, yeah.
They're conversations that families should have.
Yeah. They are. But there are a great number of bills that are really positive in the current session, and all the bills had to be filed by last Friday.
So nothing new.
This is it. Nothing new.
I like 569 that deals with reparative therapy and banning that. I think that is long overdue because it just flat doesn't work. It's cruel, and a lot of therapists now just refer to it as malpractice.
I love the tweet I posted on my Facebook page. There was a tweet about the father of reparative therapy, Nicolosi, had died, and someone says, has he tried not being dead?
Yeah.
We can fix that. Because, you know, dying is a choice.
It is a choice.
I suppose it can be.
You know, has he tried not being dead? I just cackled. It was so funny. But there's some great stuff in here. We obviously have provisions that are introduced every session. For example, to repeal Section 2106, which was ruled unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court in 2003. It's still on the books. That's the homosexual conduct law. There are lots of those that that are throughout these bills.
Somewhere Alan Ross is smiling.
Yeah, right. Yes, exactly. It's still on the books. But there are bills to require non-discrimination in employment, in public accommodations, in housing.
And it's amazing that that's a need.
Right.
You know, I'm really, frankly, in 2017, surprised that they're still having to fight for that. But it's true. In 31 states, we can be fired for being transgender. And the Equality Pay Act is still never passed. And, I mean, there's so many ways in which there is inequality.
Texas is one of those states that where we have the only thing on the books right now in terms of legislation that is codified protection for anyone in the LGBT community is only for the LG. Mm-hmm. And that is sexual orientation is included as a class under the Hate Crimes Act.
It's sexual preference.
It's listed as sexual preference. And that's it, people. As Texans, we have nothing.
That's right.
You know, only what we have in our isolated islands and big cities.
So, but in other words, if you prefer sex, then you're protected.
Right, right. It's a preference.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For those that are looking for these particular bills and many others, they're available on the Equality Texas website, equalitytexas.com. You can log on there. Is that a .org?
It's an org.
It's an org, yes. Equalitytexas.org.
And there's also a link on there where you can donate. We're fighting these battles, and our opponents are well funded. Thank you, Koch Brothers. And a number of others. So we're fighting an uphill battle against a well-armed and well-funded group. And HRC, Equality Texas, TENT, a number of organizations across the state, we need funding. And
let me mention that HRC has now staff on the ground in Texas. There's a state director in Austin, and then field coordinators in Austin, Houston, San Antonio, and Dallas.
We met the new one the other night at the protest in downtown Dallas. She's
Chris
sweet.
Louise. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, it's showing not only the importance that HRC is placing on Texas, but it's also the importance that Texas has on the national scene. What happens here is going to be impactful across the country. And, you know, North Carolina was just a preview to what we're anticipating here in Texas.
Lambda Legal, too, also.
Yes, Lambda Legal.
They're involved.
And remember something else about Dan Patrick and some of the things he's trying to do. There has been tremendous financial consequences to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what these conservative politicians are saying and claiming is, well, as soon as we get the entire South to block and have HB2-style laws, they can't boycott us all. So part of what they're also doing is banding together. It's no mystery why the lieutenant governor of North Carolina was also here this past week bantering about the wonders of HB2, because, again, he needs Texas to fall
right
to help North Carolina.
And they've convinced themselves that the economic impact is negligible. And, you know, how long can the NFL stay away from Texas? I mean, that's just not conceivable. But, you know, I think that there's a longevity in those kinds of boycotts, and I don't think that they're being reasonable.
Well, how many Super Bowls have we had in Texas since the Super Bowl era began? Three?
Four? Yeah, the one in Houston and the one at Rice University.
And there was one at, Jerry World.
Yeah, the Ice Bowl.
So that's four.
Yeah.
So in 50-plus years of the Super Bowl era, we've only had four. So, and they've had none in North Carolina, and now they're not going to get any. Mm-hmm.
Also, the NCAA, though, it's not just money, but it's prestige. You take away NCAA basketball in North Carolina, and that's like the black eye of shame.
Mm-hmm. That's your right arm, you know.
I mean, you've got Duke in North Carolina, NC State. I mean, you've got so many schools that are so steeped in tradition, and they're not going to have tournament games in their area. And I think that's important. And Texas, same way, is that you've got states like California that are enacting travel bans against states that offer discrimination. And like teams like UCLA that go to a bowl game or an NCAA tournament game, they can't fly to those states. So they're not going to schedule those tournament games. And they're also years in advance.
And all this is over where you pee.
Yeah. I've never understood the fascination. I've never had an issue with it. I've never had a conflict in a bathroom. I don't know why all the fuss.
Well, there's sometimes you have to like knock next door and say, "Do you have any toilet paper over there? And can you pass them under?
Can you spare a square?
Can you spare a square?" Exactly.
But we are going back to Austin, like we're talking about, on March 20th to talk about all these things and get as many people in these offices as we can. you know, you've all done lobby days, and I think one of the things that is most impressive about those and most inspiring, because again, I'm an optimist, when you bring people in who haven't done this before, and you know, the first meeting in the morning, you're kind of, you know, they don't want to talk, they're very tentative, but you keep them going, you keep them walking around the Capitol, and by the end of the day, they are ready to tell their story. And it is one of the most impressive things that you can see develop in somebody.
It's going to be part of the process.
If you want to sign up for that, it's going to be March 20th, which is a Monday, right. So a week from tomorrow. Go to equalitytexas.org. There's going to be a prominent graphic that you can click on there, and you need to register, and it's going to cost you $5 because they want to make sure that you come.
But that includes lunch.
It includes lunch, and they're going to have a packet for you and probably some pre-training that you can do online. They'll send you an email about that. And it's not a scary process at all, and just remember that you're going to be with other people, and you're not going to be alone. And so you're going to have a packet of information, and you're going to be prepared before you do it. So don't think of this as a scary thing. And bring some allies with you. Bring some folks who are not LGBTQI.
And energy bars and comfortable shoes, right. And water. And
like I mentioned, we are supplying bus transportation down there, so you can go back or down and back in the same day. We'll have buses leaving from Plano at 7 a.m. They're going to be at the Cinemark West Plano parking lot. They'll be leaving from the Cathedral of Hope parking lot at 7:30. You'll be taken to Austin, you know, given a briefing by Equality Texas, and then you should be back home by 7 p.m. that night. If you'd like to register for bus transportation, you can do that on the StonewallDemocratsOfDallas.org site. Again, it's all spelled out, StonewallDemocratsOfDallas.org. Or you can go to galanorthtexas.org and register for the buses as well.
Let me just ask that you wear deodorant and run a comb through your hair. And
yeah, the comfortable shoes is more important than deodorant.
Yes. And you know, we kind of touched on it earlier, but also remember that you may not actually get to meet your representative, but you may meet somebody on his staff. And sometimes meeting the staff is just as important, if not more important.
Yep. I have a great staffer story for you. You ready for this?
Yes.
Please.
Okay. I used to live in Washington, as I mentioned before, and in 2000, I met the chief of staff for a Republican congressman from Michigan, a gentleman named Pete Hoekstra. And, you know, when we first meeting, you start to talk about things, you get to know each other. And, you know, with a staffer, you can develop a relationship. And, well, in this case, I married him 10 years later.
Oh, wow. Goodness.
Yes.
That is a very interesting
That's
story.
That's my husband, Andrew.
There you go. So
hey,
you
Andrew.
Never know where the love connection is.
Now, we don't exactly. necessarily recommend that you take the staff introductions to quite that level.
Yeah. And that's not required.
Right. That's not. But and when it happens and it works, happens. I guess we're still married.
So. Yeah.
Nice. We were kind of joking a little bit earlier about meeting those low-level staffers. You know, if you meet the assistant to the shoeshine guy, it's probably not going to be that important. But if they're in one of the legislative offices, meeting the staff is very important.
And it also gives you that entree so that you can start to send letters, you can send them emails, you can give them more information, you can start to hound them. You know, that's what they're there for.
And eventually they'll send a cease and desist.
Exactly.
That guy from
Wisconsin.
Johnson.
Yeah. That was a great cease and desist letter to a constituent for calling too much.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'm like, badge of honor.
It's like, go and get a restraining order.
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm going to keep calling you.
But no, that is important to get out and be part of the process. There's kind of a hierarchy there. The face-to-face meeting, certainly the most important, phone calls, letters, and then finally emails. But any sort of contact to let them know how you feel and where you stand on issues is really, really important because they're there to represent you and your interests, whatever those might be. And you know, certainly they might be LGBT-focused. They also might be, you know, equality-focused. They might be just, you know, hey, can you fix the pothole in my street-focused?
Mm-hmm. And remember that the battle doesn't end with lobby day.
Right.
We've got city elections coming up. Next year we're going to have midterms. We're going to have state legislative elections. We've got to get people mobilized so that we can get some of these hateful people out of the legislature. We can get noticed by the people who don't think it's politically expedient to deal with these issues. We've got to send them a message. And the way you do that is participating in the process. Get out and vote. Get registered. Do it now.
Exactly. I mean, we've got to work toward 2018 when we can repeal and replace Ted Cruz.
That's it. We're going to repeal and replace a lot of GOPs.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sam Tornabene. It's been a pleasure. You're a wonderful storyteller, and we appreciate the update from Washington. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
And Patty,
so
of course.
I can come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Patty, I think we'll have you back again.
I'll probably be here.
Yeah. Next week. And say hello to
Ron
for us.
Will she be on time?
Well, I'm always early, so between Patty and I, we'll be right on time.
There we are.
And then, of course, my partner, Katie Sprinkle, thank you so much for joining me, as always, as if you had a choice today. Filling in for David Taffet, this is Lambda Weekly. It's been an absolute joy today. Thank you so much for all of your time and your energy. And we'll be back again. We will at some point in time. David, hopefully next week, 89.3 KNON.
Thanks, Leslie.